WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Sunday Morning Money Matters. Wes Moss here along with Ryan Ely to take your calls and questions and talk about Fed Week, Jobs Week, Earnings Week. Just a ton of things happening this week. We only have an hour today, so if you have questions that you've been thinking about all week and you'd like to get them in today, then give us a call here in the studio now, in this hour. Let's just do it. We're here for your calls and questions and to break down what's happening in the world so that can help you as an investor. We're here called Happy Retire. We're in the business of helping people become happy retirees. That is what we do on a day-to-day basis, helping families find happiness in retirement. We do that through income investing. So income investing is one of many ways to invest to make sure that if you're an income investor, you're looking at everything you own as an investor, whether it's a stock that pays dividends or bonds that pay interest or real estate investment trusts that pay you out distributions or pipeline companies that pay out distributions. We want that collectively to give you a cash flow so that you have some predictability in what you and I both know is a very unpredictable world. Let's talk about this week's unpredictability, Fed Week, Jobs Week, Earnings Week, and we're going to get to that because it really moved markets. A good week for stocks, up 1.5% for the S&P 500, up about 1.4% for the Dow Jones. A lot of that on the back of the triumvirate this week that was Fed, Jobs, again, economic numbers, and then, of course, earnings. That's what really matters, but the economic backdrop, of course, drives how companies can do the environment. The terrain, if you will, that companies have to navigate to continue to grow profits. And that's what we want to see as investors, steady growth over time. And remember that it is not the government that grows the economy. It is the governmental system that we're in, the free market system that allows for you and I to work forward every day as whether we're entrepreneurs or we're running companies or we're in companies. And it's the American spirit and the work ethic and all the innovation and the tenacity that we have as Americans that we move the ball forward just a little bit every day. And that's what makes this system so unbelievably productive. It's an economic miracle that we operate within. It's an economic freight train that we've been able to operate in. And there's so many fruits of that. And it's really the underlying system that's so important. And that's why I get worked up when I see a poll or a study that asks millennials, who are, by the way, very much grown-ups in the world that we live in, that talks about, hey, what kind of system do you think really works? Is it socialism? Is it capitalism? Is it communism, for goodness sakes? And when you get results like I'm about to talk about, you're going to probably get all worked up. And it's Sunday morning. We only get an hour, so it's okay. You can get worked up. By the way, the number here in the studio, Ryan Ely is standing by to take those questions and send them through if you'd like to chat for just a few minutes here on a Sunday morning, whether you're headed to church or brunch or wherever you're headed or just hanging out on the porch or in the kitchen. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. I think I feel more awake here, and I guess it's that extra hour. My wife, Lynn, this morning just said, this is my favorite day of the year. This is a gift. It is an extra hour of sleep. We're all so much more awake. Again, number 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. 872-0750 or 800-WSB-TALK, 800-972-8255. So millennials, I don't know if they don't understand socialism, and I'm actually not in that phase anymore where I'm just making fun of millennials. I'm not even that far away from the dates of millennials. So technically millennials are and again, these dates are a little bit fuzzy, and we had this wonderful speaker come and talk to the families that we work with. We had a couple hundred folks that we were at the Cobb, the new Sandy Springs arena or workplace, or it's a phenomenal, right off of Roswell Road. They have this amazing complex where the Sandy Springs City Hall is, and they've got this great complex. But we had a speaker about demographics, and it's very, there is no exact date where one generation begins at another end. So it's the dates are somewhat, you can play with the dates a little bit, but if you really think about millennials, if you were to Google it, you'll find that they're born between 1981 and 1996. So a millennial today is age 23 to age about 38. You can also look at it as 1997 or 1977, so a little bit earlier, 1977, which would make you 42, and all the way up to, again, 1996. There's actually, I read about a new demographic that's kind of a sub-demographic, and those are for the folks that are bridged between where millennials end, or the older millennials and the younger Generation X folks, which is supposedly 1977 through 1981, called Xennials. An analog upbringing, a digital life, right? So you were a kid when we were analog, and then when you became a teenager, it switched over to digital. Effectively, you got email later, either in high school or early college. But that's not the point. The point of this is talking about what this study finds. And I originally found this article in the Washington Times, and I found and then I went back and found the study itself on the nonprofit website that published it. And it's a Washington-based organization, nonprofit organization called the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. So it's an educational organization for human rights and helping those stuck in or oppressed by communism and those living under dictator regimes. Here are some of these numbers. 70% of polled millennials, 7 out of 10 millennials, say they'd vote for a socialist politician. 70%. All right. 50% of this group sees capitalism in a negative light. Only 57% think the Declaration of Independence, okay, only 57, so just a little more than half, think the Declaration of Independence is actually a declaration of independence. So think about this group. So 57% of millennials believe that the Declaration of Independence better guarantees freedom and quality over the Communist Manifesto. That means 43% of that group, 43% of them, feels that the Communist Manifesto is pretty good. Hey, it's better to deliver freedom and quality of life. What? That's a massive number. It's not like a fraction of a percent. This is a huge chunk of this group. You continue to break down these numbers, and it's showing, I don't know what's happening with how this group got to this place. 70% say they are either extremely likely or somewhat likely to vote for socialism. And the percentage who is now extremely likely has doubled in just the past year. So a year ago, this group was extremely likely to vote for socialism went from 10% last year. Now it's at 20%. Here's another amazing statistic from this. About a fourth of the respondents, so let's just call it, I don't know, let's call it a quarter. A quarter of the respondents say, of all ages in this study, say President Donald Trump is the biggest threat to what? World peace. Even more so than Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin. So you look at this chart of these millennials, and who is the biggest impediment to world peace or threat? And for millennials, it's our own president. It's not Kim Jong-un. It's not Vladimir Putin. So I don't know what's been happening, like where the millennials, and I'm not that far off. Ryan Ely is a millennial technically, and I can tell you he's not in the survey. He's not in the 70%. So I don't know where they're coming from or what bubble they're in or what city they're in. And maybe this was all just in San Francisco. I don't know exactly. Who knows what this how biased the study was, but it's a very concerning statistic. Because what we're talking about every weekend here is that it's the system, the free market system, is the economic miracle that is the United States. It allows for the freight train that you and I can every day move forward and push this economy forward. And that's what we saw this week, by the way. Jobs numbers, much better than expected. Earnings continue to be better than expected. And the Fed, by the way, the Federal Reserve, did exactly what was expected of them, which was deliver a quarter of a point interest rate cut for our economy. So making the borrowing of money a little bit cheaper, which is economically stimulative. And it also, through those operations to do that, it makes the availability of cash greater. It's now slightly easier for more folks and businesses to access capital or access loans, which, again, what is that for? Well, that's typically to grow the economy. As long as it's done in a measured way, as long as it's done in a way that makes sense and we don't create economic bubbles, which you again, we know that that's happened in the not-so-distant past. In a responsible lending environment, banks create the grease, if you will, in the system. The Federal Reserve is the primary bank that does that. They lower rates, make money cheaper, and then they make more money more available. It has this cascading effect or this chain reaction through the economy, and that is what makes liquidity available. And again, how do we grow the economy? Federal Reserve is making sure that the wheels are greased, if you will. Market liked it, by the way. A strong week for stocks on the back of all this data. So this is a big week of economic soup, up about 1.4 in the Dow, 1.5 for the S&P 500. And I looked through all of this, and they're all kind of competing for this front runner of the week. Was it the jobs numbers? Was it the earnings? Is it the Fed? I would say the Fed, though, this week. It's the Fed, Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, and their comments and their announcement on interest rates, and then what they said after that announcement that I think meant the most to markets. And we're going to get back to that, and we're going to get back to it later in the show today. We're going to get back to what they actually said and then what that means in a minute. But first, we're going to look at some of the most economically impactful numbers from the week. New jobs for this past week. And again, this was the number the first Friday of every month. So it was this Friday, it was November, for the October jobs report. For the month of October, the United States economy added 128,000 jobs for the month of October. That is a much more robust number than most of the estimates. The estimates on Wall Street, and there's hundreds of economists and market strategists, the estimates were for around 90,000. We added 128,000, so much more than predicted. Even the manufacturing sector that's dealing with the General Motors strike, even accounting for the GM strike, even manufacturing posted numbers that were a surprise to the upside. And we also saw a revision higher for jobs. We saw an upward revision for the past several months for jobs. We can look back not just for October, but let's go back months before that. A revision higher of 90,000 new jobs, 94,000 to be exact. So the data undercounted jobs added in the prior months to October. So 90,000 extra jobs, I mean, that's a decent month of job creation in itself, and we just revised the number that much higher. The unemployment rate ticked up to 3.6%, still right at a half a century low, and the only reason we saw the U.S. rate go from 3.5 to 3.6 is that we had an influx to the labor force, so more people coming off the sidelines and looking for jobs. Yet another good sign for the job economy. All right, you're listening to Money Matters. Good morning. We'll come back. We'll go to the phones. Again, 404-872-0750. Weather, traffic, then more Money Matters with me, Wes Moss, Ryan Ely, straight ahead. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We're going to go straight to the phones. Tony in North Georgia. Welcome to Money Matters, my friend. What's going on? How can I help?
Hey, good morning, Wes. Just a maybe a philosophical question. Grew up modest, had a pretty good career. 08 hit, quote unquote, got retired, lost a bunch of money in the market, probably about 30%. Gained all that back, plus a fair amount, to a point where, you know, I probably won't outlive my savings and all that. So now the question is, you know, when do you pull the trigger, and how do you know when it's time?
And how old are you, Tony?
I'm 61.
61 now, and you do know, and the numbers work as far as you've got plenty of savings now, for the most part, correct?
Yeah, all the financial models, you know, I could be, I don't know, somewhere between 95 and 105. So, it's really a question of how do you know when it's time? And I've struggled with it because I almost was retired a couple of years ago. And because of what happened in 08, I'm a little gun shy to actually pull the trigger.
You bring up, I would say, arguably the hardest part of the retirement equation, Tony, and I have been having a lot of these conversations lately. And it's the market. I think it's because the market has done well. And the S&P 500 is up threefold since the bottom of the financial crisis. So we've got this wonderful stock market. And even if you've been, let's say, a balanced investor where you've got a few, let's say you've got 50, 60, 70% in stocks, it's done great. So you look at the numbers and you say, wow, even if we do half this or even less than half as well as we have done over the past decade, man, the numbers work. The numbers look really good. But then you start saying to yourself, wait, what about what happened in 07, 08, 09? What about happened in 2000? And then am I too early? Am I too young? So there's a lot to think about, even if the numbers on the surface look like there's no problem. So I'm going to ask you to hold. We're going to run to a quick news weather traffic. Tony in North Georgia, philosophical but financial question that we'll get to the bottom of right here on Money Matters. Stay tuned.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. We're on until 10 o'clock. And then, of course, Bulldog Brunch, which I know we're all excited about. Everyone is excited about that. But we're talking about money. If we get another half an hour, so we're going to go right back to the phones here. Tony from North Georgia on the line. And hey, Tony, thanks for holding over news weather traffic. I appreciate it because I think I love this conversation that you brought up. I'm going to recap. Tony, are you still with us?
Yes.
And you really almost have it's a philosophical question, but it's also financial and it's emotional. And it's the hardest thing that I think we struggle with when it comes to retirement planning. It sounds like you've got plenty of money, and you're 61. You're kind of right on that cusp. It's still early. That's an early retirement date, but the numbers might very well work. You've done some planning. The planning says you've got a 95% probability that you're going to be fine, and that is true. But it doesn't give you 100% peace, right? Because we don't exactly know. And those models are a lot of levers in it. We put in inflation. Well, we've got your spending. It's $80,000 a year, but with inflation, it'll be $150,000 by the time you're 90, right? So you look at these plans and you start wondering, well, there's a lot of variables here. Can I still do it? And I would ask you a couple things. So first of all, at this point, now you said you did get hurt or burned in 2008, 2009.
Correct.
And
so so they quote unquote retired me with the market down, probably lost about 30% of net worth.
And were you out of work for a little while?
Luckily, not long. The 4 months, and then did very well, and like I said, it all came back and plus after that.
Well, in 2008, I will tell you, 2008, 2009, it was a really scary economic time because, and I talk about this statistic where we went from low unemployment, let's call it 10% or 4% unemployment, all the way to 10%. And if you think about it, or let's call it, we went from 5% unemployment to 10% unemployment. Still, we had 90% of America that was still working. And it wasn't that extra 5%. You think about how just devastating the economy became for a little while there, for a couple of years. We had two terrible, terrible economic and stock market years. At one point, the S&P 500 was down over 50%, 50, cut over more than half. So it wasn't the 5% of extra people that were unemployed that crushed confidence and crushed the market and crushed the economy. It was the other 90% of folks that were working, that were nervous they're going to lose their job as well. So it was this confidence. It was a very, very nerve-wracking period of time, and it took a while to unwind that. So the lesson, of course, as we go into 2020, let's say you're eyeing 2020, you've just got to make sure that at least your portfolio is set up that it doesn't take a 30% hit, even if the market goes down 40 or 50. Now, the likelihood of us going into another massive bear market like that is much smaller than it's been because it's already happened. It would be very, very rare in economic history that we would have three devastating markets all compact into a 15 or 20 year time span. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to have bear markets. Remember, a bear market's 20, down 20%, down 25, down 30. So I think the first part of this is that you've got to figure out, you've got to take your nest egg and the assets that you've saved now and grown back, you've recovered a bunch of ground, and turn that into an income stream. It's got to get balanced. So you've got to protect at least part of that so it doesn't come down. It doesn't take the full brunt of whatever the stock market gives you over the next 5 years, right? And number two, I'm a big believer that you've got to have at least a portion of it or all of it that's paying you some sort of income. Because if you can formulaically get it to the point where just the income itself is paying you most, either everything you need, you've got your portfolio, it's kicking out, I don't know, let's say $2,000 or $3,000 a month, and then you've got Social Security paying out a couple $1,000s a month. And if you put all that together and that's enough for your spending, that formula, and that's not easy to get to, but that's a no-brainer because then you're not as worried about the fluctuation of the market, right? And then mortgage. How about where are you on the mortgage? You still owe on your mortgage?
Just about $50,000 on about $1 million house.
And so that's almost paid off. And that to me is the formula where you've got plenty of cash flow from the assets plus no mortgage. And then now your spending need comes way down. I guess the next part of this is, let me go at this just a slightly different way. About how much money do you have saved that's going to be your retirement money that's going to produce income, approximately?
About $4 million.
Okay. So $4 million, which again, some people say, wow, Tony, that's so much. That's plenty of money. The reality here is it's all relative to what our spending is. So
right.
So if you can have, and I like the 4% rule, Tony, which is 4% plus inflation, meaning that you start out 4% of the original balance. So that'd be $160,000. And then that 160 grows with whatever inflation does over time. So if you're young, you're 61. Heck, but in 20 years, you'll only be 81, which, again, means you could have – that's only 20 years from now. You should still be playing golf. And you're still active at 81, right?
Very.
So the four million at 4% is 160 a year plus inflation. Then you've got another probably $30,000 or $40,000 a year from Social Security. Now we're at 190 minus taxes. Can you live on – right. If you take your tax rate of call it 20%, which will be a little, can you live on $150,000? No, but your tax rate may be a little more than that. But let's just say approximately, because our taxes tend to go down in retirement, you're living on $12,000-$13,000 a month. Then you've got no mortgage. So I can tell you, you're right. You formulaically, the asset side is should be no problem. Should be absolutely no problem. The third point here, so we talked about balance, we talked about income, we talked about no mortgage. 1, 2, 3, check, check, check. The last piece of that I would tell you would be, are you ready for this? And this is the more philosophical side, Tony, is are you ready on, do you have a ton of different things you're going to do? Are your core pursuit, do you have three, four, five different, we call them here on the show, core pursuits or hobbies on steroids? It really does not matter what they are. Whether it's volunteering or church or golf or hiking, biking, running. I listed 20 core pursuits recently on Money Matters. Doesn't matter what they are. Do you have a ton of different things that you want to be doing the day you actually stop working? Because that transition for any of us, Tony, the stopping of work, money's flowing in, I'm earning money, and that stops. And now I've got no more income and I've got all this time. That transition for the first year is actually really tough. It's a hard psychological transition to go through. So I guess, do you have a ton of different things that you're rearing to do and ready to go out and start doing?
Well, it probably would be a continuation. We travel. We've got kids and grandkids, live on a beautiful lake, you know, nice boat, all that. So, I mean, I've got fun things to do, you know, whether that's enough to, you know, keep me energized versus doing all that stuff plus working? That, to me, is the big question, that I don't sit around, you know, bored to death after. And by the way, you hit those numbers, ironically, right on the head, because that's what I've been, the plan, the financial plan, that's what that's been calling for per month. But that is the core question. Is there enough for me to, you know, be energized in addition to what I do today? And that's the question.
What a good word, energized. I don't know if I've used that terminology, but I think that is a really good term. I use the word curiosity. I think it was last week, Tony, I talked about a study. It was actually a study. It was just about men. It was, hey, what makes guys happy? What is the magic formula? I'm always in search of this formula. It's not easy to figure out, of course, but it was an interesting study by a psychologist, sociologist in the United Kingdom, and they did a really massive study here in the United States. And the number one, and this is why this is so tough, Tony, what I'm about to say, the number one commonality in, I guess, happiness for men was what they pointed out is the dignity of work. It was the purpose of what you were doing for your job. Now, I wrote about all these other – I wrote about core pursuits in my book. You can retire sooner than you think. You've got to have at least 3.6 of these. And one of them is part-time work, right? But then there's a ton of other paths we can do, other core pursuits that fulfill us. But you're right. I think the toughest transition is going from working, which has its own, and whether you're running a company or you're doing something at a bigger company, it doesn't matter. It's really tough to replace the energy you get from whatever your line of business is. I don't know what it is. It's just hard to compare to. But you get, if you like work, and ironically, only about 20% of people really, really love what they're doing. But if you're in that 20%, it sounds like you are, Tony. It's hard to replace just the sheer energy you get from a career that you love. And you're right. This is, I think for you, the numbers work. It's really about you going on that journey over the next year or two, finding out all these core pursuits that truly energize you and replace the dignity of your work, if you want to think of it that way. And yep. And it might be, and that's maybe why the number one core pursuit of the happy retiree, from what I, in the study and the research that I've done over the years, the most popular core pursuit of the happy group is volunteering. And I think it's because it is the closest thing we can, now we're not necessarily getting paid to do it, but it's the closest thing to work. We have a massive purpose for the organization that we're volunteering for. We get that same dignity of, hey, we're helping these. We may not be getting paid, but for you, it doesn't matter. You're already paying yourself. So right. I think I love that you called and we talked this through. So, Tony, I guess my answer, over the next year, just realize that it's not a overnight fix. You're not going to know exactly what you're going to be doing 2 or 3 years from now. But if you really work on it, Tony, and you've identified that this is probably your biggest variable to get right, you've got the next year or two, give yourself time to really figure out those core pursuits, because that, my friend, you've got the money side tied up. That, my friend, on the core pursuit side, hobbies on steroids, that will give you that last variable to have this super happy retiree life. And that's exactly what I wish for you. So, Tony from North Georgia, thank you so much for that call. Massively important conversation to have. We're going to run to quick weather traffic. Then we're going to come back. I want to talk about the Federal Reserve and what they said this week and why the market liked what the Fed said. Straight ahead on Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. You can find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com. If you're going through some of these same conversations and struggles of, hey, where do I go? How do I get the whole picture buttoned up? How do the financial side and all the other things that we just talked about, how do I get that really planned for? That's obviously something that we love to talk about. We write about it every single day, or we publish every single day. We do videos. The most popular video that I have now is titled, Is It Time to Retire? Talked about a lot of the questions we just talked to Tony about on YouTube at Wes Moss Money Matters. But you can find us online, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. As we wrap up today, I want to talk through the Federal Reserve and what they said this week. Effectively, the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates. They did that. They're only doing that because they don't think that we're in a runaway economy to the upside, or else they wouldn't have lowered rates. When they lower interest rates, they're trying to push the economy along. They're trying to stimulate the economy. But they also said after they lowered rates, they basically, in so many words, said, we're not doing this again. We're not going to keep lowering rates because I think we're good where we are. And then we're also not going to raise interest rates anytime too soon until we really see some big time inflation. They remember, the Federal Reserve likes price stability. That means they don't want runaway inflation. They don't want deflation. They want stable prices. They also want maximum employment, sustainable employment. But if you look at the market implications of that, and maybe this is why the market went up on Thursday and then went up a lot on Friday after the Federal Reserve Wednesday announcement, it's something I'm just going to call this three tumbles and a jump. Three tumbles and a jump effectively shows, and this is data back to 1982, there are eight instances, this has happened eight times, where the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates at least three times without hiking interest rates in between, which is effectively what the Federal Reserve said where we are today. Lowered rates three times, but we don't need to hike them. From what the Fed said this week, that seems where we are right now. If this holds, meaning the Fed doesn't cut a fourth, a fifth, a sixth time, it has been historically very positive for stocks. The data shows us that 6 months post a three-cut cycle, if you will, and we get three cuts, and actually there's an instance where four cuts is still okay as well. If that's it, and they don't keep cutting, like 1989, they cut 20 times. If you go to 2010 or 2000, they cut 10 times. If we stay kind of where we are, on average, the market ends up 14% higher, 14% higher in all those instances after about a half a year, after 6 months. So if this holds, and who knows if this holds, but we're in a scenario where it could be this three tumbles, three rate cuts, and a jump for the stock market. At least that's what history would tell us as possible. And who knows, right? It's a new day every day in the U.S. economy, the U.S. stock market. So again, stay tuned to Money Matters. What a great place to do that here on Sunday mornings. So if you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. You just find us at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com, or Wes Moss Money Matters on YouTube. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. Stay tuned to the best program on the planet right here, 95.5 WSB Atlanta's News and Talk.